Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to First Bite, our Detroit Lions midweek podcast, where we're in the middle of one of the best series of the year, where we break down the Detroit Lions 2022 draft class with a special guest that specializes in the draft pick that we're talking about this week. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I'm the editor-in-chief over at Pride of Detroit. You can find me at Detroit Online. With me as my co-host, as always, for First Bite, senior editor of Pride of Detroit, at Ryan underscore POD. Ryan Matthews is with us. How are we doing, Ryan?
How dare you underscore me in the wrong spot? How are you doing, Jeremy? You doing good?
I'm doing great. We had OTAs today. I feel like we're back in the swing of things, and I'm really excited about this show tonight because we're talking about a draft pick that I feel like is still kind of the unwrapped gift under the Christmas tree here, because we haven't seen this player in OTAs. We haven't seen them in rookie minicamp. We barely saw him on the field in 2021, and that's fifth round pick, tight end, James Mitchell from Virginia Tech. So to help us break down James Mitchell and what the Lions may have in him, we have Andy Bitter, the Virginia Tech beat writer for The Athletic. Andy, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Let's jump right into it. Because again, like, I feel like James Mitchell is just kind of the guy that we don't know too much about. So let's start from the beginning, which is what I like to do, with this college career. So, and that's with recruiting. So James Mitchell, a local guy, four-star recruit, somewhat, you know, sought after. I believe he had a scholarship offer from Georgia. So what was the reaction like on campus or around the team when Virginia Tech Hokies nailed him as a recruit?
Well, I think whenever you get a top 10 guy in state, that goes over pretty well with the Virginia Tech crowd, especially since they haven't gotten a lot of those guys in recent years. And when they got him, that was at a time when, you know, that they weren't necessarily doing all that great with top five guys in the state, but they did okay in that 6 to 10 range. And Mitchell was one of those guys. I think he was seventh in the state or something like that. The ratings fluctuate, so I'm not really sure where he ended up, but he's a guy from Southwest Virginia, and Southwest Virginia doesn't produce NFL caliber talent a whole lot of the time, even though it's got some great ones. And you look at you know, Heath Miller with the Steelers, Julius Jones, Thomas Jones from Big Stone Gap before James Mitchell came out of there. So, you know, when you get somebody from Southwest Virginia, you keep them in state, you keep them close to home. I think that goes over very well with Hokies fans because they're tired of seeing them go to somewhere like Tennessee, which is pretty close to that region of the country. I know James is pretty academically inclined, so I think there were some other schools like Duke looking at him or something like that. So, you know, the fact that they landed him, somebody as versatile as he was, somebody as well-liked in the area as he was, I think it went over very well.
So Andy, with as sought after as he was, and like you just mentioned there too, like, you know, an academically inclined guy, why do you think he ultimately chose to stay home and play for Virginia Tech?
You know, I can't remember from his recruitment specifically. I think the lure of playing close to home was a pretty big deal to him. And, you know, in Big Stone Gap, there's a lot of Virginia Tech fans out there. I think when he committed, I talked to the principal I believe it was the principal of the school at the time. They're like, we had Enter Sandman like all queued up and ready for him to commit. And then if he had gone somewhere else, they had no other plan. So like he picked Duke. They were probably going to play Enter Sandman anyway, because there was no other plan for him when he was committing. So I think there was a pretty big pull for him to stay close to home, and he did it.
Well, let's jump into him as a person, because it sounds like, I mean, you already mentioned he's a intellectual kind of type of guy. I know he made sure he wanted to degree. I believe he got his degree already at Virginia Tech. Is that right?
Yes, I think so.
But yeah, can you tell us more about the person that he kind of is on and off the field? You know, is he a quiet type? Is he a vocal kind of leader type? What have you gotten from his personality from your time covering the team?
You know, he's very well-spoken kid that, you know, when he was like a freshman, he was somebody they would bring into the interview room and he'd be like, whoa, this guy's pretty good. Well, maybe not as a freshman. They have rules about whether freshmen can talk here. But as soon as he was able to talk to us, we're like, this guy can, you know, I don't want to say talk in complete sentences, but like put together full paragraph thoughts when he's answering questions for the media. Now, he didn't always do that because I think he was smart enough not to say anything crazy to the media. He would give pretty, you know, concise answers. And they didn't tell you too much. He was pretty polished in that regard, but you can tell he's a really smart guy, a very personable guy. Somebody who just seemed very mature for his age. And I look at his history and his upbringing with his parents, and they were, I think, pretty religious people down there. I'm trying to remember from the stories that I've written with that, but he just seems like a very grounded, well-adjusted kid who got to college and was like that right from the bat, right off the bat. It wasn't like there was any sort of maturation process that he needed over time. And maybe there was that, but it didn't seem like that outwardly. It seemed like he was pretty well put together from the second he got here.
And, you know, you talk about his time at Virginia Tech, Andy. I'm interested, did he have the opportunity, or was he at all interested in declaring after his junior season? Like, what was that something that was like a will he, won't he, when he was at Virginia Tech, if he would return for his senior season?
Yeah, there was a question about it. And, you know, Virginia Tech was going through sort of a rough time, like whether they were going to turn the corner, and it was coming off the pandemic year. So everybody's like, well, what are they going to do? How do you judge this kind of season? Do you go on after that being such a difficult season to get through? And I remember him tweeting his decision to come back, and it was obviously very well received by the Virginia Tech fan base. I remember asking him what the process was like, and I don't know if he got a draft grade back from the NFL. I know if it's above a certain round, they just say, go back to school. They don't say like, you're a sixth round pick or something like that. They just say, go back to school. So I think that was the recommendation for him. And I think the poll of finishing up his degree, you know, I don't know if he did graduate or if he plans to graduate. I can't remember what his schedule was. But, you know, getting through 4 years like this, you go to the combine and the draft process, you're not necessarily in school during that time. But I think if he didn't, he's probably committed to getting that degree if he hasn't gotten it already. But yeah, I just think that whole process off the bat when he got here, I mean, he was a very focused kid when he got here.
So he comes back for the senior season, obviously tears the ACL. But I think before that, you know, he gets named captain of the team. Can you tell us about that kind of leadership that he had? Do you know what kind of leader he was in those huddles? Again, is he kind of like, is he the rah-rah type, or is he more lead by example type?
I think he's probably more of the lead by example. He's not a guy to me that gets all extremely just like worked up or something like that when he's playing. I do know that I believe he had like a handshake for like every offensive player on the team when they scored a touchdown. Like, I seem to remember him going to the sideline and have like a 6-step handshake with every single person. So it just kind of shows you a bit of just, you know, how he related to his teammates and the kind of respect he had on this team. But he's not one that's going to go out there and just get all worked up and everybody's going to feed off that energy. I think he's more of a, you know, go about his business type of person, and people follow that example.
What can you tell us about his nickname, Andy? The governor?
The governor, I don't know exactly where that originated. I can't remember if it was an assistant coach or something like that called him. I think it kind of speaks to like how polished he is. I mean, he sort of is like a politician like that, and that he's just, you know, it's sort of a magnetic personality, and people sort of follow what he says. And I don't know, it might be an early bid for his future gubernatorial attempt here in Virginia. I'm not so sure about that. I know if he were to run for any sort of office in Big Stone Gap, he'd probably win in a landslide because he's worshipped down there. People are very, very interested in him as a person down there.
So he does suffer that ACL injury a couple of games into the 2021 season. Can you talk about the loss that it was for Virginia Tech, maybe both as a leader and obviously a key piece of that offense?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. And, you go back, and I think it came against, was it Middle Tennessee or Richmond? It was one of those games early in the season. I think it was the second game, so it was probably Middle Tennessee. And it was a goal line carry. And they had this thing where they do a tight end sweep, and he was really successful at that. You look at his career numbers, he had five, six, seven touchdowns running tight end sweeps. It was a really effective play for the Hokies. And, a guy just caught him coming around the edge and took out his knee. And they didn't think it was going to be a severe injury at first. We asked Coach Justin Fuente about it after the game, and he said he didn't think it'd be long-term. And then apparently the trainer came back later that night and is like, we're going to have to take an MRI of this, take a deeper look. And then by, Monday of that week, we'd found out that he's out for the year. And that's pretty crushing for a team. I mean, he was a key piece of this offense. They didn't have a ton of receiving options who were reliable. He would split out wide at times. He was just, you could set your watch to him at tight end for how reliable he was at that position. Even though they didn't throw to him a ton, when they did, you know that he was probably going to be open. He had a touchdown in that North Carolina game in the opener. So there were very high expectations for him. But then, him coming back for this season, you feel bad for a guy like that, that got injured in that way, that, was expecting big things for the season. So, that was a big hole in this offense. I think you saw how it affected this team. Certainly in the passing game, I think even Justin Fuente said later on, like, we didn't realize how much we'd miss him as a blocker too. And you miss him off that edge. And, for a while there, they were just sort of treading water and not getting much of in the ground game. And I think that was a factor with him not being in there. So yeah, that just, it just sucked. There's no other way to say it. I'm an impartial observer as a reporter, and even I feel bad for him that happened, because you don't like to see that happen to somebody who made the decision to come back and play another season and wanted to sort of put together this big season before he went pro.
Well, I think that's the perfect tease to get into who he is as a player on the other side of this break, Jeremy.
I think you're right. So let's take a break here. We'll come back and dive into James Mitchell as a player, what he can bring to the Detroit Lions, and maybe expectations in year one and beyond, as we're here on First Bite with Andy Bitter from the Athletic, the beat writer for Virginia Tech Hokies. We'll be right back here on First Bite.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we are back here on First Bite, talking all things James Mitchell, Lions fifth round pick, tight end, with our fantastic guest, Andy Bitter, the Athletic, Virginia Tech beat writer. So let's jump into Mitchell as a player. Let's start. There's some eye popping numbers from Mitchell, and I know he only started in 20 games, and I know, maybe his best football was left to be played that senior season that got cut short. But 18 yards per reception. How was he such a big play threat that maybe never got utilized as much as he should have at Virginia Tech?
Well, I think they schemed a lot of stuff to get him some of those big gains. I know he had like a 70-yard touchdown catch or something like that. It was like a 60-yard reception against Miami. I think he got caught like inside the 5-yard line, something like that. But it was like a sort of almost like a tight end wheel route, if I remember it correctly. So, I don't think he's somebody that he catches it and he's, you know, juking guys down the field or anything like that. But he's got pretty good speed for his size to separate, especially against linebackers. If he can get open in the seam, he's going to get there and catch it on the run and get a pretty big gain on it. So, pretty impressive ball skills. I mean, he can catch the ball pretty well. That number did stand out, the average yards per catch. And I don't know if it's a function of Virginia Tech's offense, that's just how they threw to the tight ends instead of a bunch of short stuff. Because as you can see, he didn't have a ton of career catches when he was with the Hokies. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those catches did go for big yards.
So when he was recruited, Andy, was he originally thought of as being a wide receiver and then he made the transition to tight end at Virginia Tech?
I think it was always going to be tight end with him. Okay. When he was in high school, he played like receiver and tight end, but then his senior year, the quarterback got hurt. So he stepped in a quarterback, even though, you know, I don't think he was an exceptional thrower or anything like that, but he was the team leader and the best athlete on the team. And he played in a very small school out there. I think it was a single A size school. And he was just like the best player on the field. And that's just what he was. And it wasn't like, oh man, how are we going to get this guy on the field? We're going to, he's our best player. We're going to have him play quarterback. Well, I think everybody knew quarterback wasn't going to be his position in college. And, you know, at Virginia Tech, this tight end H-back type thing that they have, it has a lot of responsibilities, and it takes somebody that knows a lot of the offense and can process a lot of information very quickly. It's one of the tougher positions to pick up, or it was at least on the former staff when Justin Fuente was here. So I looked at his recruiting profile. I see it had him as a receiver. I think the plan at Virginia Tech was always tight end with him, because he got in there and it was tight end right from the start.
So can you talk about just real quick about, you mentioned in the first segment that you could set your watch to James Mitchell at tight end. Like, you know, as an inline guy, you know, you could count on him as a blocker and things like that. Where else, you know, you talk about the expanded role being tight end, H-back, like slot receiver. Do they ever put him out wide? Like, I mean, how much did they move him around like a chess piece?
They did. They did play him in the slot quite a bit just because they were so short on receivers all the time. And, I think when you split him out wide, he's not necessarily a wide receiver, but he's better than average out there as a slot type guy. He certainly was passable there for Virginia Tech and, you know, probably added a little bit to those yards per catch when he's out there in a little bit of space. You know, they handed him the ball quite a bit, as I mentioned, around the goal line. That was something that he just had a knack for finding the end zone when they handed the ball off to him. He returned punts one year. I mean, the punt return game was so bad at Virginia Tech that they were looking for anybody back there who could catch it. So they have this 250-pound tight end back there returning punts. And he actually did muff one. I think they got it back. I can't remember if they got it back or not. I think they did. But, for the most part, he was back there and he was fairly reliable as a guy who caught the ball. But that just kind of shows you the trust that the coaching staff had in him to do anything that they asked of him. Because, you know, I mean, how many teams have a guy that big returning punts for them? And, they kind of got in a pinch in terms of quarterback depth at one point. And I think two guys went out and we asked Justin Fuentes, like, who's your emergency quarterback? He's like, well, we haven't told him this yet, but it's James Mitchell if it ever gets to that point. So I think there was one game where they were down to like their third or fourth string guy and they didn't have anybody else after that. So had that guy gone down, Mitchell would have been the emergency quarterback. I don't think they would have expected much. I think there was a game against Clemson too. So it's like, oh man, that would have been fun to go into that game. But it would have been Mitchell. That just shows you the kind of versatility that he had though.
I'm sensing a theme, Jeremy, of he is just always the next man up.
Right. College football is wild, by the way. Like, no other level of football would they even consider stuff like that, I think. But it's interesting because I think a lot of the conversation around Mitchell is as a receiver, right? And I think part of it is the eye-popping stats, the 18 yards per catch. But the Lions obviously already have a pretty strong pass-catching tight end in TJ Hockenson. So I guess, you know, I feel like Mitchell's probably headed to a more balanced role. And I don't think enough people talk about his blocking because, you know, my first deep dive in him in the film, that actually kind of stood out to more a little bit more than his receiving. So Andy, I was wondering if maybe you could kind of give a scouting report as to his skills as a blocker.
Well, I will tell you off the top, I am not an X's and O's film guy.
Okay, fair enough.
Nor do I pretend to be one. All I know is that it seemed like he was a good enough blocker. Mm-hmm. And when he got hurt, I do remember Justin Fuente telling us, man, we really miss his blocking on the edge of that line. That is a big hole in this offense, something that's missed. I think they thought when it happened, they had some guys that were going to be passable there. And perhaps they were, but they weren't as good as James was. So, you know, that's probably all I can lend in terms of what kind of blocker is. He's certainly willing. It's not like he's a sieve out there.
That's half the battle,
on
right?
On the end of the line. Right. And, you know, judging on how he approaches anything, I would think that if he put his mind to it, he could be whatever kind of blocker he wanted to be, because that's just kind of the player he is.
Yeah. So speaking of that mentality that he has of, you know, being able to set his mind to something and do it, let's talk about like year one expectations for James Mitchell. You know, Jeremy mentioned the Lions have a tight end one. They have TJ Hockenson. Do you think that, you know, as long as he's ready physically from the ACL, and I guess that remains to be seen, is he somebody, Andy, that you think could immediately step in and fill a role as a tight end to, like, is he strong enough as a blocker? Is he, you know, is he heady enough as a tight end? And, you know, his time, like you said, at Virginia Tech, all the things he did with the H-back and stuff like that. Do you think that he can seamlessly make that transition into year one as an NFL rookie?
Yeah, I think he's got, you know, that mental ability to do that. He can wear a lot of hats. Seems like he can pick up stuff quickly. I remember in the spring before his senior season, it might not have been spring, it might have been August before his last season here. And I saw him up close in either training camp or the spring. I can't remember which one it was, but he looked noticeably bigger. Like I saw him and I go, wow, this guy looks NFL size. Like he looks like a future NFL type guy. And normally I don't notice that kind of stuff, but it just kind of popped out to me. Like this guy, he's put a lot of time in becoming, you know, adding a little bit of mass to his frame. So I think the question with him, it comes down to his knee and when's it going to feel healthy. And I'm sure they don't want to rush anything because you never want to rush that. But, you know, by the time the NFL season starts, that'll be about a year out from the ACL tear. And, you know, you get all sorts of recovery times on ACL tears. Right. There's more severe ones and less severe ones. So I don't really know how he's going to come off of that or how quickly he'll feel like himself in terms of cutting and running and things like that. But I think if he is healthy, you know, this could be kind of a steal of a pick, because I think if he has a healthy final season at Virginia Tech, I don't know if he's going in the fifth round.
Right.
I feel like, you know, he was never going to put up crazy numbers here because that just wasn't the offense. They weren't going to throw it to the tight end 80 times in a season or anything like that. But he would have done a lot better and maybe caught a lot more eyes than what he did and have fewer question marks about him with the knee injury. So, you know, I saw when Mitchell went off the board, I'm like, yeah, I thought he could have gone higher if he was healthy. So I think the Lions are probably in pretty good shape with this guy.
One of those questions that I think still are left to be answered is kind of like what kind of an athlete the Lions have in him, because obviously he couldn't do most of the athletic testing at the combine. And I guess, you know, a lot of people like to just kind of rely on those athletic testings to judge a person on how fast they are, how agile they are. Do you kind of have an overall sense of, you know, obviously this guy is a burner. He's not going to outrun safeties and things like that. But what are his limitations physically, and what are things that he excels at physically?
You know, like you mentioned, he's not just this blazing speed guy. He's not going to run by you, but he's fast enough and he gets open and he gets separation. He's got a good combination of size and speed. I don't think there's any part of his game that really is deficient. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned before, he's nimble enough with the ball in his hands to run it near the goal line. He's got that knack for getting in the end zone around there. So, you know, I think it's a pretty good skill set. You combine that with the mental side of things. I just think he's a really solid player. all around. He's not one that you're like, oh man, this is a big hole in his game. I just don't know if that exists necessarily.
Kind of a jack of all trades kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the question that I had, the last question that I have, Andy, is in Dane Brugler, his awesome draft guide, The Beast, he mentions about James Mitchell that he's the kind of guy that coaches go out of their way to talk about. And the Lions are clearly on this, they're on this rebuild, right, with Dan Campbell, and it's really a culture thing first and foremost. So a lot of the players that the Lions drafted seem to be these leaders, team captains, and guys who are culture fits. What about James Mitchell seems like he's a culture fit for a football team?
Well, I'll go back to a story I wrote about him in 2019, so before his big breakout season at Virginia Tech. And I talked to, like I said, I believe it was the principal at his high school, Union High in Big Stone Gap. And Big Stone Gap's like 5,000 people. So if you're a football star out there, you're like a star. Like you were a big deal when you're out there. And he'd play football games, and they would build in like an extra hour to his post-game routine because they knew that after the game, there would be a line of people waiting for his autograph. And James, good guy that he is, would sign all of those autographs. Like, it's not like he's like, not today, guys. I'm not feeling up to it. Like, he would just like sign them, kids and adults. I mean, there's just all sorts of people that are waiting for his autograph, and he would dutifully do that kind of thing. So I think that gives you a little bit of an idea of the type of person he is and how connected he is with people that are out there. And I think that's played well in his entire career at Virginia Tech. He was a fan favorite here. I think a lot of people really enjoyed him. And I don't see why that would change in the NFL. I think he's going to be that same sort of down to earth guy. And that's something that I'm sure football coaches love.
That's a great off the field story. I want to see if I can pull an on the field story out of you in terms of maybe just a moment on the field that kind of encapsulates the kind of player that he is in terms of the weapon that he can be. So is there one play or one game that maybe Lions fans can go back and check in on and be like, wow, that is who the Lions are getting. That's who he could be in the NFL.
Man, you gave me the questions ahead of time and I meant to go back and find a specific game like that. And I don't know if I have one off the top of my head. I remember the UNC game during the COVID year in 2020. Mm-hmm. He just had a huge game in that one. He was catching balls over the middle and down the field, and just seems like whenever they threw to him, he was getting 25 yards. I think he went over 100 yards in that game. That was one that was, you know, UNC didn't have a great defense in that game. Virginia Tech had a worse one that was even more ravaged by COVID, so they couldn't stop anybody. That was a really high scoring game. But if you want to see him sort of in a wide open offense, that was one where the Hokies had to throw the ball a lot in the second half. And Mitchell was a very featured player in that one. That Miami game in 2019, I can't remember what he had yardage wise. I think he had a pretty big receiving game. Dalton Keene, another tight end, had 3 touchdowns in that game. So I don't know if Mitchell got the end zone in that game or not, but that was one where, as I mentioned before, they ran sort of this wheel route play for him to get open, and he caught it on the run. I think they caught him inside the 5-yard line. But that kind of shows sort of, you know, his range and his speed in the open field. So that was one. And, you know, if you're looking for a game from his senior season, the touchdown he caught against UNC in the opener was sort of almost like a backyard play. Like it broke down in the background. Braxton Burmeister, the quarterback, kind of rolls out to his right and then just rifles it to an area where I believe afterwards he's like, there were 2 guys there. I was sure one of them was going to catch it. He rifled this thing, and Mitchell goes up high to just snag it out of the air. A pretty impressive catch by him. And, you know, a little disappointing that that was about all we got to see of him last year because he got hurt in the next game. So off the top of my head, I should have done more research. I apologize for that. But those are a couple moments that stick out in my mind about his time here at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, no, that's plenty, because I think one kind of common thing we've heard is whether he's running the ball or catching the ball, he can be a bit of a red zone threat at the next level.
Yeah, go back and watch. Like, there were a ton of games where he got goal line carries. It was one of the most effective plays that the Hokies had, which is why all these people are like, what are you giving him the ball around the goal line for? It's like, because he was great at it.
Right.
Was that because they didn't have like a goal line back, and he was just like, hey, we should put the ball in this guy's hands?
they really, for a while, they struggled quite a bit at their goal line running. They didn't have any big guys that could move a pile like that, or until Khalil Herbert in 2020, they just didn't really have anybody like that. And Mitchell was just so fat. Like, I don't know if other teams didn't scout it or didn't know it was coming, because they get down there and everybody in the press box is like, here comes a tight end sweep. And they score a touchdown. It was like, I think one year it was like 6 carries and 5 touchdowns for him in the year, 5 and 4, something like that. I mean, he had a very good touchdown to carry ratio when he was down there. It was almost automatic. So that's just something to watch. Just kind of show his ability down there.
If there's someone that might dig that up and use it, I feel like it's the Lions' new offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. But let's call it that. Andy, thank you for joining us. I want to give you a moment here to kind of plug your stuff. Maybe if there's anything you remember that you wrote about James Mitchell that Lions fans would be interested, where they can read it, where they can find you, all that good stuff.
Well, you can follow me on Andy Bitter VT, my Twitter account. All my stuff is on theathletic.com. I did write a story, James Mitchell, in 2019, April of 2019. That was before his sort of breakout season. Headline, a small town, big star. That could be the case for Virginia Tech tight end James Mitchell. I've got to say that one aged pretty well. Sometimes you write about those guys early in their careers. You look at it later, you're like, man, that just did not pan out. This one panned out.
Yeah.
So I feel good about promoting that one because it makes me look somewhat smart for writing about that at the time.
There's also an article right before the 2021 season. It's kind of heartbreaking to read in retrospect, but you talk about how big of a deal it was that he returned for the 2021 season, and talked about maybe how, you know, it could be such a big money season for him. He could jump high in the draft, and unfortunately none of that played out, but I think it speaks to how important he was to that Virginia Tech offense that didn't really take off in 2021 because of the injury.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have loved to have had him. I'm sure Justin Fuente, who got fired last season when they went 6-6, would have loved to have had that arrow in the quiver there of his offense.
Yeah. And I think they ended up finishing second to last in the conference in points per game. So certainly seems like they missed them.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Again, thank you to Andy Bitter for joining us. Thank you all for listening. We are already halfway through this series. Can you believe it?
I can't believe I have 9 days of school left. That's all I care about. Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, we will be back next week. Who do we got? It's probably Kirby Joseph week, right?
It is. It's Kirby Joseph week.
So we will have a full podcast devoted to him next week. But until next time, thank you for joining us. And I mean this quite a bit this week. It's chaos. Be kind.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.